It's Wednesday, November 24th, 2010, and you're listening to episode 213 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 9 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
This is Wayne.
My name is Pat.
And this is Chris. And those idiots lied. They told me that you weren't here, Pat.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Actually, Chad just said he was a sicko.
Well, no, before the mics, we were talking about the fact that Pat wasn't making any noise, so I thought that he wasn't here because I knew that he had been sick. And so I asked, is Pat here? And no, nobody says anything. And then now you jump on the mics, bastard. But I'm happy that you're here anyway.
I'm glad, Chris. I'm happy that you're here, too.
Hey, thanks.
For the moment.
I could care less about either one of you.
It is nice to have you back. Now our summarized age is no longer the oldest man on the show. Oh, I'm so clever. All right, so Chris.
Actually, that one was pretty good.
You're welcome. Chris, before we get into our utter stuff, you had a request of sorts that you wanted to send out to our listeners. So take it away.
That's right. As regular listeners will be more than aware that episode 200, for some reason, does not exist. And that is because we're working on it to make it a video episode, and I had volunteered to fall on that grenade. And things were going okay until I started to get extremely busy to the point where I couldn't even be on the mics anymore. But now that that has changed, I've picked that ball up one more time and have begun running with it. So as this is an episode which is, as we talked about earlier, nothing but a bunch of grab-assing for how great we are.
The more you describe this episode, it just seems to me more and more of this episode 200 is us talking about how wonderful we are.
Have you read the script?
No.
Okay.
Of course not. No,
it's all about other people talking about how great we are.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't expect Chad to have an informed opinion.
Of course.
No.
Silly me. My
what
bad.
What show are we on?
But what I'm looking for is, I mean, part of the reason why we have been around for 200 plus episodes is because listeners keep coming back and they keep listening and they keep commenting and they keep joining the community and doing all of the things that we, you know, participating in all the things that we do. So what I would like to do is, within the episode, provide an opportunity for listeners to talk about any number of things. What they like about Fear the Boot, why they listen to it every week, what makes them come back, what do they find that's annoying about it, favorite memories, whatever.
I would personally love to hear some stories from people that have taken the advice and it just completely fell flat. I'd like to see a whole series of that, you told me to do this.
I'm going to write you out of the script right about now. So, but anyway, if you decide to do this, what I'm looking for is either an audio or a video file. And when you send it in, you're not going to send it into one of our normal Fear the Boot emails. You'll send it into feartheboot@gmail.com, of which Dan will provide that in the show notes because he's a nice guy like that.
You almost said I was a nice looking guy.
You are a nice looking guy. He was on such a roll.
Oh, yeah. I'm just wondering how much furry porn he's going to get.
I'd totally tap that. Anyway.
I'd hit that.
And anyway, so yeah, send that in. But the real restriction here is you need to keep it brief. No longer than, we'll say, 12 seconds. And let's go, you've got until December 10th to do this. Because what this episode, by the time this one drops, it'll be Thanksgiving week. So that should give you a good couple weeks to get something like that done.
All right. Other thing I want to hit on. Is a while back, we mentioned that a guy by the name of Mindtaker on the forums, or Mike Ham is his real name, he put together an iPhone app called RPG Toolkit. And when he came to me with some of his early ideas and early sketches for it, I really liked where he was going with it. And so we struck up kind of a partnership where basically we are sponsoring this application. Now, we do not make any money off this, so this is not some kind of a grab on our part. Now, if you're interested in checking it out, the gist of the application is an iPhone app for helping with your role-playing game. It's got a built-in dice roller, character creator, searchable note system, and also you can sync it up. So you can go onto a website, which is rpgtoolkit.feartheboot.com, which once again I'll put in the show notes, and you can put stuff there and then sync it up with your iPhone app and vice versa. It'll sync back. And the app was a great app, but it had a little bit of distance it needed to go. And with version 1.3, which just came out, Apple just approved it, he was able to integrate a lot of feature requests, a lot of stuff that he did on his own. And quite frankly, he has just taken this thing to a whole new level. So I feel like this is worth mentioning again. If you already have the app, the stuff you can look for in 1.3, is we got a hold of Keith Curtis, and he's now put in some logos and layouts and some graphical representations for cards and dice and such. Mike has added the ability so where you can clone character attributes to make character creation quicker. You can email, I think this is really cool, you can email an HTML version of any character sheet to anyone else so they can pick up a copy. And also the restriction that was previously in place on note length has been removed. So notes can now exceed that previous 1,000 character limit. But this is a great app. I think it's like $1.99 or something like that.
$1.99.
Yeah, very affordable.
And there's
price.
A free version too.
Yeah, there's also a free version. So if you want to check out what it's like, you want to try before you buy, you at least get the free version. And I will put this in the show notes. This is something that if you're the sort of person that's looking for a game helping app for your phone, of all the ones that I have toyed with, I definitely recommend this one. Like I said, I put our resources behind this because we believe in it, not because we're making money off of it. So at least get out there and check out the free version. For our discussion topic, Chris, there's something you've been kind of grinding an axe on in the back room of the forums, and I've just been sort of passively watching this discussion. Because I get it, but I'm not sure exactly where my opinion falls. So do you want to take this one or do you want me to set it up?
No, I'll go ahead. I'll set it up. We'll see what happens. And, you know, and I do have to say that my initial opinion on this was corrected somewhat by both Chad and Wayne, which I appreciate that. But I still think that the core of the argument is true. Obviously, so much of what we in this community read and enjoy, you know, whether it's from comics or novels or whatever, anything within that geek realm, so much of it is being adapted to both small and large screen. This is, of course, have been going on for years, and we kind of know subconsciously in the back of our minds that what ends up on the screen is not going to be 100% faithful to the original source material. But yet, every time this happens, and we do see differences, we get in this huge uproar of like, how could they have done this to my favorite piece of fiction? No, they've changed it forever. But we all knew this was going to happen, and everybody seems to just get so bent out of shape about some of these things. But yet, at the same time, you knew this was going to happen. So why are you wasting, or why are you investing so much energy complaining about it, as opposed to, say, I don't know, either A, enjoying it, or B, you know, feeling good that maybe something that you have your own little intimate love affair with is getting more exposure. And it just seems to happen every single time, and it doesn't matter, no matter how long this has gone on, it still continues to happen. And granted, there are some examples where that's not the case, and I'll let you guys talk about that. But
you know, and I don't get the overall complaints about it. I mean, there are a lot of material that's come out that's actually close to the source material, but nobody ever goes on about how close it was. It's always the things that are different. I don't want it to be exactly alike.
Already read the story.
Exactly.
Why would you want to see it again?
I want the ending to be different. I want character aspects to be different. I've already seen that story. Sometimes I do want to just see it in a different media.
That's exactly.
But I want it different.
That's exactly what Mike Mignola said about Hellboy when they interview him about the movies. I'm a huge Hellboy fan, and I have like everything that they've put out just about, or Mike Mignola's put out, and the movies are quite different from the books. They have a lot of the same characters and themes, but they're very different, although two is much better than the first one. But he said in an interview, he's like, you know, I don't want to tell the same story again. I am a writer. I create. I want to tell a new story. And we can use these characters and these themes and all this stuff to tell a new story. And Kirkman said the exact same thing, Robert Kirkman, about Walking Dead, which is a new TV series that's on some channel AMC. That I could care less about. Well, I don't care because I don't have cable. Because I'm one of those snooty people. It's like, I don't have cable because I don't watch TV.
I don't have cable.
I don't have cable.
Good for you, Chad.
Thank you. I have Netflix. I cannot say I don't watch a lot of TV. I actually watch a huge amount of TV.
Man, the smug is getting pretty thick in here.
No, I just have a lot of gas. But anyway, that's what Kirkman said about The Walking Dead. He already wrote the story. He wrote the comic book. And the comic book's great. I read the comic book. It was wonderful. And he wants to tell a different story. He doesn't want people to watch the movie who've read the comic book and go, and he's going to say this, and this is going to jump out, and this is going to happen.
Well, let me
and
take the other side of the debate on this. Now, I will simply accept that, first off, particularly if we're talking about length, if you have a 1,000-page novel, you cannot convert this into a 3-hour movie. I mean, it just can't be done. things have to get dropped to make it work.
And then if things are going to get dropped, you have to make edits and changes.
You have to pick what's going to get dropped and then find some way to clean up the holes that are left behind. So I totally get this to a point. But there are two arguments commonly made for this. One that hasn't been brought up yet and one that has, that I'm not sure I agree with. Now, the one that hasn't been brought up is, well, that won't work in this medium. That when we convert this to film, what worked in a comic book won't work on film. And quite frankly, I have never found that convincing. I'm not saying you couldn't give me an example of where that may have been true.
I think there would
but
be
I think that is a cheap way out more well, often than not.
Any story that's told, particularly not necessarily a comic book as much as a novel, any story that's basically told from inside of a person's head, you're going to have to make changes because you can't have that in a movie. Mm-hmm. You can't have their entire thought process about everything coming out in a movie for a mainstream audience.
Fair enough.
I'd counter that saying, though, with a movie or any visual medium that has any kind of motion to it, you get a lot more chance for characters to emote and convey a lot of that thought process or that internal struggle.
Yeah. You know, I have to say, Wayne, though, that it's like the internal thought process and the internal struggle thing. There was a movie that really went off the ranch as far as the book to movie conversion, and that was the original Dune.
Oh yes.
Now I am a
you got
huge...
tons and tons and tons of shots of somebody's face while you hear their voice whispering, but, and because it's whispering, you know it's their thoughts.
You know what, I like that. I am a huge Dune fan. I absolutely love the book. The movie had nothing at all to do with the books. But it didn't bother me because I enjoyed the movie as a science fiction movie.
Right, well,
and the internal monologue with the narration, that actually worked for me.
Well, I think people get too caught up on the names. I mean,
hold on here. Let me draw this back and get my second point out before I go too far off the ranch. To your point, I do accept there are some things where that statement is true. It won't convert to film. Faulkner books would make awful movies. Pat would probably say, if he ever said anything on this show, that he thinks Faulkner books make awful books.
I already said that. I said in the last episode.
Oh, is Pat
ever read Faulkner?
Yeah, believe it or not, Pattison is here. but the second point that I would make that I don't always buy is I want to tell a different story. Now, I don't have a problem if that was a true thought. If someone says, I want to tell a different story than I have previously told, that would be fine. But let's take Hellboy 1. Hellboy 1 tells the Hellboy origin story. That is not a new story. That may be a reimagining or a reworking of an existent story, but it's the same thing with the whole Star Trek 11 thing.
Hellboy 1 was pretty different.
And they had J.J. Abrams talking about this of, look, if you want to start over a brand new franchise, why did you not just do some space movie the movie? You know, why did you feel the need? And he gives an explanation, but I'm not going to chase that because I want to debate the forest, not the trees. But my point being,
because likely to pay $8-$10 to go see a Star Trek movie rather than space movie.
Precisely, Star Trek means something.
Precisely. Yeah. But let's bingo. That's the piece of honesty I think is missing. It is a marketing choice, a financial choice, not a creative
and
choice.
And that's because a movie's a business.
But when I go in to see a movie that carries the same name as a book I love or a comic book I love, that's the story I'm expecting. Because when I read a book, I get one experience. When I read a movie, even if word for word it follows the book, it captures a different essence of experience. And when I go and put my $10 down to see my favorite book, the movie, that's what I want. I don't want them to rework it. If they're going to rework it, that's fine. Make something new. Don't sell it to me as, hey, here's blueberry pie, but by the way, there's no blueberries in it.
Yeah, I am actually in complete agreement with you on that, Dan. In terms of the original properties, you know, that's exactly what I want to see. Now, Chad, I like your idea of taking something and making a new story, and that's all well and good, but you like you said, you got to title it that way. Say that this is based on the whatever, it's the Dune series, but like in your instance, I've seen the original. I have the original Dune movie, and it's a horrible movie. I saw it before I'd read the books, but in you know now that I've read the books and everything, the books are so much better. And
well,
you know, and that's
the
thing.
Time all the books
that story that I want to see, I wanted to see it I wanted to see that, you know, told into the movie. And then you see this bastardization of what, you know, he really did with a lot of that, of the story in there. And that I don't like, because that's not there. In my mind, Frank Herbert did a really good job telling a story. I don't think it needed to be changed.
You know,
I think it needed to be presented.
There's going to be some comparison that's in the, going to you be know, there.
And, but that's, but that's for these properties though. Like if you're going to tackle a known work, if you're going to do a Dune or you're going to do a Lord of the Rings, I don't want to go see Lord of the Rings where, you know, Frodo decides to keep the ring at the end.
You know, there's people who bitch about Lord of the Rings as close to the books as it was. It doesn't have Tom Bombadil. Well, guess what? Tom Bombadil was bullshit.
Okay, it was a
character,
but barring that, they
totally
did
it, unnecessary,
they did
it. And it was really incredibly stupid. It was totally out of place in the books, and it had nothing to do with the theme, and it was something that he liked from his children's childhood, and it was just something that he had. You know what? Cut that out of the movie.
Two examples that I can think of offhand are when they redid Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire, whatever the his name is. He... I read Spider-Man comics growing up, and honestly, I didn't even notice this until somebody pointed out to me, but his web shooters in the movie, of course, are all biological-based, whereas in the comics, of course, it was that was something that he developed. And I didn't have any problem with that.
It was updating.
But yet a lot of people did. Same thing with Burton's Batman. When they made the Joker, the guy who, you know, who would become Joker, be the person who killed Bruce Wayne's parents. That's not what really happened in the comic, but yet...
Why would you ever walk down an alley called Crime Alley?
Yeah,
Why would anyone go there?
Crime Alley's the nickname. They didn't know that that's where they were at. They were lost.
These are upper crust
people.
They don't know the commoner's
name
for it.
Why were they in that
And you know, Chris,
town?
Well, here's the thing about the two examples that you just named, really, for me, don't fall into the category of what I was talking about. Because, yes, you're talking about they made a Spider-Man movie or they made a Batman movie, but they didn't take a known work, like a set story of
right.
Batman and said, okay, we're going to adapt this to film, and then just completely changed it. They took the idea as a whole in both of those cases. Now, yes, they were heavily based on many of the stories from canon. I get that. And then they changed some things. That doesn't bother me as much as, like I said,
well, so the,
you take an existing single-standing book and change
it. Well, most comics, just like Batman, they're a mythos. They have been rebooted and re-envisioned so many times in the pages of comic books.
Right. Yeah.
That by the time you get to the movies, I mean, you might as well just say whatever anyway. Well,
that's true.
And, you know, but there is a trend for more of these contained stories that are going out there. All of the Alan Moore stuff that they've been doing, Kick-Ass, Watchmen, all of these that were a single story.
Well, yeah, now you're getting into this is a graphic novel or a limited run. This is not like 60 years of a comic.
My biggest problem with all these comparisons, I'm cool with comparing it to the original work because there's something there. But the problem is when people can't seem to get over the fact that it's something different and judge it on its own merits versus the merit of what it's built on. My best example is iRobot the movie. I don't refer to that as iRobot the movie because it is my personal pet peeve. It has nothing to do with iRobot. I refer to it as generic Will Smith robot movie.
And that was a wonderful...
Generic
absolutely
Will Smith
great
robot movie.
Generic Will Smith robot movie until I had issues with the big finale at the end, but I thought it was a great
movie.
It
was a product placement movie. It was generic, and
it was fun.
Well, and I can judge that on its own merit. I am a huge Asimov fan, a huge fan of the actual book, iRobot. I went in expecting to see that. I didn't see it, but I didn't spend years ranting about how they've besmirched the original book.
Here's the thing you guys have to remember. A movie is a business that involves a lot of money and a lot of people. And so if you are a producer, I have this idea for a movie. And you know what? It's going to be a generic robot movie and we want Will Smith in it. Well, when you go and pitch that to a studio exec, they're going to be like, well, you don't have Will Smith yet. And it's a generic robot movie. There's not much we can sell on that. It's sounding direct-to-video to me, and I'm not really seeing the envision. Well, we have a license to do Asimov's iRobot. No one else is touching it. It's never going to get made, because no one wants to see except Dan and myself and maybe Pat and Wayne, want to see a courtroom drama with a robot. But it's summertime. We could get this into a big action flick for the summer. And you know what? We could sign Will Smith on to do that, And so thus this process happens and it goes through a lot of hands and then suddenly you have iRobot the movie. Okay. Now, I'm not saying that's right,
right
or it's wrong or anything like that. I'm just saying it's a process.
Well, and I totally get that. And you are 100% right. I totally get that it's a business. They got to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And I completely accept that some part of this is me clenching my fists in impotent nerd rage.
Yeah.
Over the fact that they change things I like.
You know, and I'm not saying don't criticize the product.
Right.
I have huge issues with Incredible Hulk, the movie. I've gone on and on about how I think it's one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Well, this is awful. Well, yeah. It's on rights.
Well, and that's the thing. Every reason I have for hating it isn't comparing it to the source material except for one. So I don't argue that one point. But one point is I think that they missed the core of the character by not having him be responsible for creating the Hulk, by his father doing it.
And
but they had the piano theme, and they had a riff on the piano theme, so come on.
Let me add one more thing, though, about the business aspect, too, because people are going to be banging this drum about artistic integrity and purity of the source material and all this stuff. Who sold the studio companies the rights to these licenses?
Yeah.
Who sold iRobot? Asimov sold the rights to iRobot for it to get made into a movie.
Actually, he didn't. He was dead when the rights were sold.
Well, then his estate did.
The point is, he handed those
rights over to somebody who would sell it.
The point is, somebody was a whore before the studios.
Yeah.
I mean, they grabbed something that was public domain.
iRobot's not public domain.
No, I'm not saying it was. Yeah, somebody was a whore before the studios
Remake of Night of the Living Dead now, that's public domain.
Yeah.
I mean, let me give a counterexample, though. Chad, one of the things that you've brought up numerous times throughout the history of this show is...
I don't remember.
No, you'll remember this. I'll be shocked if you don't remember this, is the Jeremy Brett Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, my God.
Now, there are... three truths that you have said about Jeremy Brett Sherlock Holmes.
If I were a homosexual, I would want...
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Four. But point two is you said that it's great. It's awesome.
Yes.
Point three is you said it sticks faithfully to the books.
Almost word for word.
And implied point four here is in order for you to know that, you must have read the books.
I've read a couple of them.
Okay.
I haven't read all of the
Sherlock Holmes. But your point is... you've read the material, they converted it over to screen and did so faithfully, and the end product was great.
Yes.
Why is that an exception?
It's not an exception because I'm not arguing for one point or another.
No, I mean within Hollywood. Shaking fist and impotent nerd rage. Why in Hollywood is this the exception?
Because it was made 20, 30, 40 years ago?
Because in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, not that long ago. BBC and Grandia Television and ITV made... historical movies. They made historical entertainment, and then they made ones based on books. And because they're so damn British, they had to stick really, really close to the books because the British are like that because they like education and thought and art. But you know what?
Backwards.
I know, right? But even then, British TV does not make things like that anymore.
I was gonna say,
they don't make I, Claudius. They don't make that stuff anymore. The Jeremy Brett Sherlock Holmes, they don't make that kind of stuff anymore.
Have you seen the newest incarnation of Sherlock Holmes that the British have got going right now?
No, I have not.
It's actually, I've only seen two episodes. I think it's in the States here. The Brits have seen obviously more, but in the States, I think there have only been maybe four episodes shown. It's interesting. It's literally, it's a modern adaptation. It's present day London. And, I like it.
You say, why can't Hollywood do that? And my counter argument would be, I had two counter arguments. One, if you drift from the source material, but make a good movie, that's okay because it's a good movie. The book is still the book. The book will always be there.
What you see on the screen does not affect the contents in the book.
Yeah.
That's one of the points I have to drive home to a lot of people. Yep. There's a lot of people close to me in my life that really stuck up on that concept of they've ruined the story.
Well, hold on.
My second point, though, is that just because Hollywood made it doesn't mean that it departs from the book. There's a lot of examples where there's a movie or TV show or whatever that follows the book really faithfully. Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. I've read the book and seen the movie with Johnny Depp in it.
Except for the ending, Watchmen was very close.
Watchmen was very close, and what they changed, I'm glad they changed.
Except for the ending, Kick-Ass was very close. Of course, in their defense making it, they had the movie script written before the comic script was
Sin
completely
City,
done.
Very close. Actually, you could say 2001, it's hard to say which one was closer to the other because he was writing the novel as they were writing
And Cooper spent too much time on trippy space scenes.
It was the times.
I know.
You know, if they were to make that movie nowadays, it'd be different, but... Yeah, that was the times.
I think the best perspective on this I've ever heard was I was listening to an interview with Douglas Adams from years ago, and he was talking about it. He's like, if you look at everything that's been released for Hitchhikers, there's mm-hmm. been the books, there's been the British TV series,
mm-hmm.
there's been the radio drama.
Listen to it.
This was before the new movie came out, so he wasn't making
that. Saw that one too?
He said, every one of them is my story.
Yep.
It is my story as told in that perspective. The book is how I would tell that story on a book. The movie is how I would tell that story in a movie. The audio drama, the radio, is how I would tell that in a radio drama. I don't personally want to tell the same story, the same, you know, in all different medias. Yeah. I want to take advantage of the media I'm telling it.
I
thought that was a great approach.
Don't understand the nerd
that
rage.
Is actually.
And let me tell you that I'm talking about nerd rage here. I'm not talking about I saw this movie or TV show and I did not like it. You're entitled to your opinion. If you don't like it, I'm not going to say you like it. Yeah. But I don't understand the nerd rage of they took my favorite book and they totally trashed it and changed it when the guy who wrote the second thing, the movie, the TV show, whatever, was the guy who wrote the book. Like Hellboy changed. Mignola helped write it. You're talking about Walking Dead. There are people who say, oh, that changes. It's horrible. Kirkman helped make it.
Well, but I don't think the source speaks to the expectation. If I am a world famous chef and I make great steaks and you come into my restaurant and put down $30 for one of my world famous steaks and I give you a pork chop and stuffing, you're going to be like, what the hell? Where's my steak?
It could George be the Lucas, where the hell's my steak?
Yeah. I mean, it could be the greatest pork chop and stuffing you've ever had, but this is not what you paid for. The fact that the steak chef's the one who made it for you doesn't suddenly make it a steak again.
You know, I guess I see it as when I go into, we'll say a movie, for example.
Right.
When I go into a restaurant,
it's expectation.
Yeah,
expectation is what I would
when I go into a restaurant and I order a steak, I want a steak. There's a picture of the steak on the menu. There's a description of the steak there. They put the steak in front of me, and now it's pork chop. Again, greatest pork chop I've ever had, but it's just like, guys, there's a problem here. When I go into a movie, I don't know what I'm going to get. This is why I read reviews. People are like, oh, you can't read reviews. That's just the opinion of somebody else, and you're just conforming your opinion to their opinion. No, that's BS. You're spending a lot of money to go to something, and you don't know how it's going to be. You have clues. You can see trailers, read interviews, you know, read reviews, do whatever, talk to your friends who've seen it, blah blah blah, but you don't know if it's going to be good. You don't know if you're going to like it and all that sort of jazz. Same thing applies to a movie property. That's something you've already read. Yes, I've read the book and I've loved the book, but when I go into that movie, I don't know if I'm going to get steak or chicken or pork or whatever, but I'm willing to give it a shot because I like the movie and maybe I like the director and I read a review that was pretty good and my buddy said it was great and I want to have a nice night out with the wife and she's read the book too. And if it was good, we can celebrate it. And if it was bad, oh my God, can we rip it apart?
You know, and if you do get the pork chop and it is the best pork chop you've ever had and it's really good, why can't you acknowledge that? Yeah. Yes, this was good. I really enjoyed it. It wasn't what I ordered. It wasn't what I expected. But on its own merits, regardless of what I wanted it to be, on its own merits, it's still a good thing.
That well, because you told me it was a steak, not a pork chop. Look, let me give you...
It's still a really good pork chop.
Let me give, there's an emotional investment in there that sometimes I think people have a problem separating themselves from that emotion. They can't objectively look at what they viewed and said, yes, this is entertaining because it involves these aspects. No, they look at it from that emotional reaction and say, that sucks. They raped my childhood.
You know, I keep
you know,
hearing...
And it goes from there. They just can't separate that.
I keep hearing a left-handed ownership of the property. They've ruined my childhood memories of this. They ruined my favorite book. And when they rebooted the show, that was my show.
Maybe a lot of people do, but I know
an attachment there that is coloring people's opinion.
Maybe so, but I know in the past when I've gone to see movies that are based off of some of my favorite books, I do know what I'm expecting to see. So what you're saying, that makes no sense to me. It's like, I've read the book. I know what I'm expecting to see. I'm expecting to see this. And granted, I'm not stupid. I know it's a movie. Some things are probably going to be maybe cut out of it for length or shortened. But when they take something and they have the characters do something that was completely not in the book, I mean, it just makes no sense for them to change it this way, that, or whatever. That ruins it for me. It does ruin it, and I don't enjoy the experience. So I don't have what you said, I do not have your experience of, I enjoyed it for its own right. I didn't, because I saw this movie. It was not at all what I expected. They didn't follow the story, which is what I wanted to see in a movie. That's what I wanted to get out of it. And I didn't. And so I didn't enjoy it at all. So it's not, there is no enjoyment in its own right for me.
But would you have enjoyed it if you'd never read the source material? That's the question I ask myself. And when I'm struggling to look at a movie and actually judge it fairly,
well,
Kick-Ass was a good one. I hated the ending of it. And I had to step back and ask myself, because it varied from the source material?
I have a problem. If you're going to do that,
I know that.
I just have a problem with that. If you're going to make a movie about a book and you don't intend to follow the book, don't make the goddamn movie.
Why not?
Call it something else.
Why?
Exactly. You're making a movie about X property, and if it's all of a sudden it's Y instead, then it's like it's lying to the audience. You're lying to me.
You don't want them to stray too far away, is what you're saying.
No. That's all a movie is a lie. Because the special effects are real, the actings are real.
Okay, the same thing for books. It's all books are.
Yeah.
Books, it's a fantasy.
Sure.
So no one make any goddamn movies about books then. What do we get? Why do it? Why make a movie based on a book?
Do you have the same issue with remakes and re-envisioning? Because when you sit down, you know what you're expecting.
Yeah.
But this is something new. I am not a fan of the 80s Battlestar Galactica. I know I have a lot of hate coming from that. I didn't watch it in the 80s. I've watched it now. I found it corny. I found it shallow. I really enjoyed the new Battlestar Galactica as something new. But a lot of people around me were fans of the original, and they judge the new based on the original.
Yeah, but I think if those original fans go back and really look at that, you know, that old series again, they'll realize, I watched this crap. Because you know what? I can say that because I've done that. All have around here. We've gone back and looked at the, you know, watched the things that we watched 20, 30 years ago. And we realize, oh my God, these are really crappy.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So,
there's a difference between saying something's crappy and enjoying it. People can enjoy crappy stuff.
I mean, you know what? Yeah, I can watch often. Those. I can go back and watch them again and still enjoy them.
Yeah.
You know, they're campy. They're crappy. I still get enjoyment out of it. But that's not the point.
I think that's just it, though. My argument is that you can make an enjoyable movie and get enjoyment out of it. And the fact that it didn't follow 100% what your Pat Roper's interpretation of a book is and expectations of that book does not make the movie or the property
I'm not asking for 100%. I'm asking to follow the spirit of the book. I think a lot of people, when they diverge so much, they're not following the spirit of the book.
Well, see, that's just...
Or the spirit of the original story.
I tell you what, if you...
And that, I think it's wrong. That's my opinion, of course. That's the way I feel. Sure. And that's I don't want to see it if they don't. I think it's wrong to do.
And I think that you can make a movie. We'll take Hellboy for an example. Hellboy 2 had absolutely nothing to do with anything that happened in the comic books.
No, it was a growth of the first movie.
Yeah, it was a growth of the first movie that departed wildly from the comic books. And I wish that they would make a comic book adaptation of that movie because it was so in the spirit of the comics. It was very, very much. It was so very Hellboy.
After everything I've said in the other direction, this is going to sound really hypocritical. I'm glad they did, because comic book adaptions of movies always suck.
Well,
They're never as good as the source material.
No, I hear you there. I hear you there.
All of which are trumped by video game adaptations.
Yes.
Holy crap.
But I think that you can make something in the spirit of the original property that is an excellent movie. To me, if you didn't like the movie, don't like the movie. Dune, the guy who made Dune, the director, the original one, I forget what his name is.
Last time too.
Yeah, but anyway, I'm brain farting on that. But anyway, the original 80s Dune movie, I enjoyed it because it had a lot of the sort of stuff in it. It had a lot of the trappings. It had some of the feel of the book. It couldn't capture all of the feel because honestly, that's a pretty weighty book. That's a pretty weighty tome.
But you know what? They did it either in the early 2000s. I believe in the early 2000s.
That was a whole
you know
TV
who it was?
Series.
It wasn't that much longer than that original movie. David Lynch. It wasn't that much longer than the Lynch monstrosity. And, I mean, it was a miniseries, but it was like 3 days. I think it was 6 hours. The original Lynch, I think the uncut one is like 6 hours. So yeah, they could have. Well, he could have done it. He just didn't. And that one was a British one. That was a British miniseries.
I like David. It's very good. I like David Lynch, and I like him as a director. I think he's incredibly insane. He has mental problems, and he's probably a danger to himself and others. But I thought the movie he made was good. I enjoyed the book, Dune. I don't think that they had much to do with each other, and I thought that it was good on its own because it departed. It doesn't make me like the book less. It doesn't.
Here's my point, though.
You can have both. My point.
Okay, I can concede that it is possible to make something loosely based on an IP that departs from the original IP that is good.
True Blood, the TV show, is far better than those horrible series of books.
But I think we've also established it is possible to make something that is faithful to the source material and be good as well.
Yes.
Excepting, once again, yes, you have to change some things, such as you can't do a 1,000-page book in a 3-hour movie. But given the fact that you can stay faithful in most cases and still tell a perfectly good story, why is that not done more often? Let me give you an example. You've thrown out Hellboy several times.
I'm a huge fan.
I know, and that's cool. But let me throw out a counterexample, something I'm a big fan of, which is War of the Worlds.
Sure.
When H.G. Wells wrote War of the Worlds, there were a couple factors that always in the book stood out to me as major themes or setting pieces within that book. Number one was the time period it was set within. The fact that this was set in late 19th century England, not 20th or 21st century America. Number two, the aliens were not invincible. It was a war of the worlds, not a one-sided slaughter. Now, granted, the Martians with their advanced technology were winning, but there were scenes all throughout the book where the army or navy would show up, have it out with one of the walkers, and destroy it. They would bring it down with cannon fire or with naval vessels or whatever. There was a sense that while humanity was basically screwed, don't get me wrong, they were fighting back. I am also a fan of the 1953 War of the Worlds. Don't know my movies well enough to tell you who was in it or anything like that, but I watched it as a kid. I've heard the radio drama, and while I'm not such a big fan, I did also go see the Tom Cruise, Steven Spielberg version.
Is the 53 version the one with the clitorati in it? When they're shooting their little laser beams out of their things?
Yeah.
Out of their little nubs?
Yes, that would be the 1953 one. Okay. Where they also floated on three pillars instead of walking because they couldn't at that time really do a
animatronic.
Good, yeah, they couldn't do a good special effect of something walking on a tripod.
Harryhausen told them that.
You know, but here's my point. When all of those came out, none of them captured what for me were themes of the book that I wanted to see presented in a new medium, presented on screen. Because as much as I read that book, there is a visual element to British artillery having it out with a walker and taking it down that just looks badass on film that wouldn't carry over in the book. But nobody has done it.
And in the reason why the 1953 version doesn't follow that mold is because the horror they were trying to portray there was the Cold War. They were not trying to do man versus an alien.
My point is not because, that it was because awful or pointless. My point is that they could have told a different story in a different time, and
they didn't
very artificially chose not.
The reason why they didn't is because at that time, the Cold War was scarier than what you were going for. And I'm not saying what you were going for is great. I want to see that movie too.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. I want to see that movie. But in 1953, you're trying to put butts in movie seats, and a Cold War sci-fi flick with lots of destruction and explosions and teen screamers going, an alien and all that sort of stuff. That's what put people in movie theaters.
But by the same logic, couldn't the Jeremy Brett Sherlock Holmes have been about him searching out communist spies instead of solving mysteries in Victorian England?
I don't think that would have sold at the time because that came out in a different period. Yeah, came out in the late 80s.
You could apply this across, I don't know.
The reason why Jeremy Brett Sherlock Holmes was not going after communists is because it was Grandia Television and they had a tradition of putting out these TV shows that were very, very faithful to the books.
Right.
Before Jeremy Brett. So the audience that they were drawing, because again, this is a business, the draw of the audience hit that sweet spot where they were going to be really, really faithful to the books, whatever they were doing, and that was going to get people to sit there and watch commercials.
I guess my central thesis here is that a good movie and a faithful telling are not mutually exclusive ideas.
Of course they're not. They're not in any way.
And I guess my central point would be a good movie and an adaption that has nothing to do with the book are not mutually exclusive either.
A good movie is a good movie.
The movie can still be good if it has nothing to do with the source material.
A good movie is a good movie. A good book is a good book. And to be honest with you, I've seen movies that were better than the books.
Yeah, I will agree with that one as well.
You know, I think it is possible to go the other way. And if the creators are chained to the book, those movies wouldn't have been able to be made. Or if they would, it would have been crappy. To be honest with you, Fight Club, I'm a huge Chuck Palahniuk fan, or however the hell you pronounce the last name. I've read several of his books. I enjoy them thoroughly. And I've read Fight Club, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. Fight Club, the movie, is better than the book, and the book was pretty decent. Chuck Palahniuk says the movie is better than his book is. He wrote this thing and put it out there, and then somebody bought the rights. And when they bought the rights, they got a team of writers on there, and they were like, you know, Chuck, that's a really great scene, but would it be better if we did this? Fahrenheit 451 is another one. There is this whole scene with Montag and the chief of the fire department where they go to the chief of the fire department's house and it's filled with books. And there's this whole scene, all this dialogue that was added specifically for the movie. And who wrote that? Ray Bradbury?
Yes.
Ray Bradbury was like, that was so good. I wish I had thought of that. I wish I had thought of that and put that in my book. Now, of course, they didn't have the robotic dogs with the deadly little needles coming out of their nose, dripping with poison and all that, which was really cool, but they couldn't really do the special effects for that. So there's little things that you kind of have to give. I mean, there's give and take. It's a creative process. Creativity is good.
Let's talk about something more directly RPG related here.
Like politics and religion.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about which is better, Apple or IBM compatible.
There's no contest there.
I was just trying to come up with something pointlessly inflammatory.
No, we will avoid the phone conversation at all costs.
D&D editions. Go.
Did you know that Apple has gotten rid of their server line?
They had one?
They had a server line and they got rid of it. And somebody emailed Steve Jobs and was like, hey, I run your servers. I love them. Why are you getting rid of them? And he said, very frankly, because nobody bought them.
All right. So there was something that we talked about on Fear the Boot a while back, and it was in the context of a larger discussion point, or I suppose a slightly different discussion point. We were talking about trying to find new players or trying to find a gaming group. And in the midst of that discussion, we threw out an idea which spawned a discussion, which I think has now led us to a related but more narrow conversation. So let me take this from the top. The piece of advice we gave was that if you're looking to add someone new to the group, it might be a good idea to have some kind of a tryout with the person, where basically you guys all go out to dinner with them or do a one-shot game to see if they're a good fit for the group. And frankly, that sounded great in theory.
It does. It sounds so logical on paper.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, before you commit to this thing that's your main hobby that you're doing every week or whatever, have the guys meet them. Have them talk to this person and then, see if everyone gets along.
I still think there's merit to doing it if you can find a way to do it without letting the person know that's what you're doing.
Well, I must have not been on this episode because I never would have endorsed that idea at all.
Yeah, I don't remember when this was done because I don't know that I was on it either. But for me, it falls along the lines of, just like with anything else, say you've got a bowling team, mm-hmm. You know, you've got a group of guys that you're part of a bowling league and you're looking for a new player. And, you know, this guy that maybe he's interested in bowling. I don't see the point of taking him out for beer and wings if you're wanting him to bowl. I mean, you're going to do the activity that you're talking about with him.
Well, and
you
I
know,
think
that's what I'm thinking. It's like, what's the point? And I mean, if he doesn't gel with you guys and that, and that's what we're really going to get to is like, if he doesn't gel with you guys there, then that's there's the issue. But I think, you know, the interview, I mean, the initial thing is, hey, do you like to bowl? Yeah. Well, you want to come bowl with us sometime? And same thing. It's like, hey, you know, you want to try playing in our group, or do you role play at all? Or we game on Sundays. You want to come and, you know, try our game with us, see what you think of it. There you go.
I think the thing that we were trying to avoid is, first off, the person may have quirks or social traits that aren't immediately apparent. Or secondly, they may be perfectly nice guys, but they're just not into the same type of role playing mm-hmm. that you are.
You're into Princess Party dress-up LARPs. They're into not that.
Yeah, or whatever. I mean, you're into serious dramatic role-play, and they're into beer and pretzels dungeon crawls, or vice versa, or whatever.
Or maybe they're into serious dungeon crawls, and you're into beer and pretzels role-play.
Yeah, who knows what. But the point being that it was an idea that sounded great on paper, but recently within our own group, there was a guy that Chad and Wayne met at work, and they thought, you know what, this guy might be a great addition to our group. And so we said, oh, you know, maybe we should follow our own advice, set up some kind of time to go meet this guy.
And he looks exactly like General Zod from Superman. Yes, well, he does.
So when he's at the table saying kneel before Zod, that kind of turned you guys off or something, or what?
Turn me off?
Yeah, that's... What are you thinking, Chris?
But when we went to actually do this, the whole thing suddenly seemed, quite frankly, overly bureaucratic and on a personal level, dehumanized.
Yeah. The way
it turned, do you want to be our friend, into an application process?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the idea behind, hey, you know, how about we have the guys meet you and see if everyone gets along, then we'll game. It sounds like a good idea. We're seeing it's a social thing. Everybody likes beer. You know, we can go out and get something to eat and just hang out and gel. And it's an icebreaker, and people can become social before the game, because instead of, hey, okay, sit down, here's this person you've never met before, now we're going to role play, and there'll be some uncomfortableness, it gets that uncomfortableness out of the way. And so there's a Kip, this guy at work, he wanted to join our group because he wanted to get back into role playing. And actually, we talked about Kip. He was the guy whose wife who didn't let him role play and such, and he wants to really get back into role play to kind of prove he's a man, I guess. And so he kept approaching us. And we were like, okay, yeah, we kind of want to get this guy. And so I'm like, let's do this right. Let's actually, for once in our lives, follow the advice that we give on Fear the Boot, and we'll do it right. We'll do it how we suggested we do it. And so it's like, well, you know, we talked to him. We said, what kind of games do you play? Up front, told him, well, this is what we do. This is what your expectations are. What are your preferences? These are our preferences. And then, how about we set up a night where you meet the guys and we'll all go out to dinner? And he's like, sure, I guess. And as I was doing this, as I was setting this up, I felt awful. It felt so static and robotic. Felt like I was setting up a job interview for the dude, and that he was going to have to apply. He was even making jokes about a resume, and that he would have to apply. And Kip was very cool about the whole thing. I don't think he was uncomfortable or bothered at all, but I was very bothered by the whole process. And it just seemed to me to be like I was dehumanizing Kip, turning him into an applicant so that he could join our group.
The more I think about it, the more I just don't think it would work. I mean, you're not getting what you're actually going for. You're doing this dinner thing to see what the guy's really like. Is anyone actually like they really are in real life when they sit down for an interview? No, everyone's putting their best foot forward, or they're nervous, so they're not behaving like they normally do. There's something off in your mind if you're going in for an interview, and that's exactly what you're doing to a person if you're doing something like this and telling them that you're doing it. Now, if you're just finding an excuse, hey, we're doing a board game night, you want to come over, and not mentioning anything else, that's a different story because you're getting a little more canned actual presentation.
Yeah. And that's how we tricked you into getting on the show, and that actually worked out really well. Jokes aside, I mean, that's what we did. We needed another person on the mics, and we were like, well, I know this guy, Wayne.
I guess the difference with the show is, while it's not exactly a job, it's not exactly a hobby either.
Yeah.
I mean, this has fallen somewhere between personal entertainment and work, and I'm not sure exactly where it is, but I, you know, with the show, yeah, there's a public image. This is not just a purely private pursuit.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't
approach
it.
There's a public image. There's a product. There's a brand. That's not the case with a Sunday role playing. No.
You didn't approach it like we're saying doing it, though. It wasn't a, okay, come try out on the mics.
No, I lied to Wayne in a way. I said, I said that, why don't you come and we're going to do an episode, because Wayne had started listening to the show and you really liked it. I was like, well, we're going to do a bonus episode about comic books, and you are a comic book guy. You're a hardcore comic book guy. Yeah. And we need a subject matter expert, which nominally we did. And I don't remember. I got sick.
Yeah, you had Concrud.
Yeah, that's right.
It was
right
after Gen Con.
That's right. I had Concrud. And then that was like the perfect excuse. Like, hey, we need a subject matter expert. We're going to be down a guy. Do you mind filling in for me? And you did you meet these guys yet even, or did I just
see
you over here?
We were all gaming together for like a year.
Oh, we were gaming. Okay. I don't remember the order of events. It's just like, it's all a blur to me. I don't live mired in the past.
We had been gaming for a year before that happened.
Yeah. And so we sent you over and we didn't know how you'd sound. And we certainly didn't know you'd be the worst thing that ever happened to Fear the Boot. And it worked out. You worked out really well. And then a day later, everyone was like, oh, he was really good.
I would have approached it very differently if I'd sat down on the mics thinking this is some sort of an interview. That never crossed my mind. Mm-hmm. Going back, I don't think I did very well, but someone apparently saw potential I didn't see. I think the next episode after that, when I actually realized I was on the mics, that one I think is one of the worst I've ever done on the mics. And gradually, as time got over, I got more comfortable doing this, and I just don't mind if I'm bad anymore.
You know what?
I know Dan's going to edit it, and I'm going to turn out 10 times smarter than I actually originally sounded.
You know, I'm sitting here thinking about Mikey Mason and Noble Bear and Johan and all these people, and they're are they sitting there right now thinking, was I being tried out?
And I failed?
You bastards! Yes. I gave it my all.
Yes, you did.
Actually, I can say in all honesty, God's honest truth, in the course of Fear the Boot, while we have had people we've brought on for a single episode genuinely as a subject matter, I don't think we've had a failed tryout yet.
No.
I don't think we've ever brought someone onto the mics with the intention of keeping them. You know, it was not a one-shotter because we just needed a subject matter expert.
Yeah.
Like when we brought Keith Curtis on to talk about gaming art. We really did just need him for that one show to talk about gaming art. Would I have had him back? Absolutely. But sure. He made it clear from the start he doesn't have time to do a show. Yeah.
So how do you guys keep Johan coming? Do you string him along? Is he like the Fear the Boot
intern?
You
just keep leaving.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I got
it's
stuff
really
to
that
do.
It's all your fault, Jeff.
He's Uncle Johan.
I wish I had an Uncle Johan.
He's our monthly visitor.
Yeah, he's our monthly visitor, Uncle
Johan. I'm glad I'm not around.
Yeah. He's our monthly visitor, Uncle
He doesn't
Flo.
Sit here, does he?
Oh, yes, he does.
No, actually, I sit there.
Put a roll of Scott towels on. Underneath.
Oh, okay, that's good.
Actually, we have to wipe it off before he sits down because he doesn't want to sit where you've been.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't blame him there.
All right. So what is the best way to handle it? Look, I mean, let's take a situation. You've got a gaming group. You want or need another person. There's a guy.
You got a guy who's trying desperately to prove something to his wife and all of his male friends.
Yeah, he's trying to get his balls back. And you want to make sure of two things. One, this guy is going to be a good fit in terms of your gaming style because there is some order and organization to the hobby. There's an expectation of what you'll get out of it, just like when a book's turned into a movie. And so you want to make sure that this guy is going to fit into what you're looking for. But then secondly, there also may be people in the group who have never met this guy.
Yeah.
And so maybe two or three of you or one of you is buddies with this guy or works with him, and you know you can get along with him, but you don't know he's going to fit in personality-wise with the rest of the group. How do you find this stuff out without either A, dehumanizing the guy, or B, bringing him in on such a lengthy trial basis that getting rid of him is a political hot potato and or has done irreparable harm to the campaign?
Well, and that's just it, Dan. I don't think that there is any really best way to do this. I mean, the situation you're talking about is you're bringing somebody new into a group that some or most people won't know. Examples we've given, at least some people knew them, like, you know, Kip from work. Mm-hmm. I know in the past, you know, it was some people we knew from either school or whatever. So somebody knew them. So that right there, I think what it is, you have to sort of trust in your friends that
they have a sort of a good feel. And I mean, you should have a decently good feel for what your group is looking for in the first place, because you're part of it. You should be tied in well enough to know, okay, yeah, I know what the group kind of gels with, and I know this guy somewhat, and I think he's going to be a good fit. You should be able to get a first impression there. And then beyond that, I think it's just, you've got to jump in with both feet and try it.
Yeah.
But on down, like you said, down the line, what it might happen is, and this has happened with us, we'd get people in there and they last for a while and something, it just didn't sort of work out. But luckily it just sort of, it kind of worked itself out where mm-hmm. they just didn't come anymore. Well, you know, it can get awkward, but I don't personally think there is a best way to do it. Other than you just start doing it and hope for the best.
And I'd have to agree with you. I don't think there's one real right way to do it. Really, you know, I think if you at least make it clear to them all the criteria that you laid down going into this, Dan, about, hey, yep, we need another player. Yep, we need to, you know, we got to get somebody to play this kind of character, that kind of thing. Make it real clear to them from the get-go that, yeah, you're going to be doing this. If you can couch it nicely and you can kind of deflect some things off, say, look, you know, yeah, we got kind of a quirky group. We just want to make sure that you're the right fit for it. But yeah, by all means, come and sit down with us for a few sessions and see if you like it. And also we'll see if we like you and be very upfront about it.
Well, I have to say, too, don't be afraid to put on the brakes at the last minute, too. Because I had to do this. The group I had before this current one, we were putting together the group. I didn't have a group at the time. And then I had some friends who were interested, who'd never role-played before. I had another guy who had role-played. This is John. I had another guy who had role-played before. He's interested in finding a new group. And we were starting to kind of put people together. And there was this one guy who I really liked, and everybody liked him. We were all friends. We were asking him, we were talking about it, this sort of nebulous, not be at my place at this time, at this date, bring potato chips and beer, and we're playing D&D. It was more, we're kind of planning and talking and stuff. And he was in, right? I mean, he was the guy who was going to get the invite. And again, this was all just consensus. This wasn't like this some nefarious plot that we catched with Wayne. And in talking to him at the 11th hour, we started the conversation of what kind of gaming do you do? Because he was an experienced role player. What I wanted, because I was the guy who was kind of putting the group together, is I wanted adventures and I wanted lots of role playing. I wanted people to get really in character. I wanted it to be about the story and the adventure and that sort of thing. This guy was hardcore, module-driven, flavor text only dungeon crawls.
Oh, yeah.
Like, your entire character write-up was your name. That's it. You had nothing else about your character except your character's
Chris,
name.
I want to combine everything I know about you. Could you do me a favor and write a first edition module called Womb of Horrors?
And you know, he was on about how his idea of a perfect game, he couldn't wait to play with us because he was just going to kill goblins and take their stuff. And he was the type of guy, you get the graphing paper out, you draw the room, you kill everything in the room, you search for traps, you take the treasure, you find the hidden door, you go to the next room. You do that all again, and you do it all again, and you do it all again, and you do it all again until you get to the main bad guy, who is Evil Wizard. What's the Evil Wizard's name? You hippie role player. And then you kill the Evil Wizard and take his boots, and then you leave, and then next week you do another dungeon. And that's what he wanted, and we were like, no. And how I handled it was very passive aggressive and weak and kind of shitty, and I just didn't invite him. And then he kept asking, so when are we going to do this? When are we going to do this? And it's like, oh, well, we'll plan something. We'll get around to it. We'll plan something. By that point, we were already three games in. And
so yeah. I think my tentative revised advice on the subject.
Not do what I did.
Well, yeah,
that was pretty
yeah, is I think on the personality front, Pat's right that, look, whoever's inviting this person has to be discerning enough to feel out their personality. And maybe the rest of the group just has to do some level of trust. Or you can find something non-committal and not communicate this as a tryout, but just say, hey, you know, I'm going out with a bunch of the guys, you know, that are my friends. We're going to go out to dinner. We're going to see a movie. You want to come with us? You know, you seem like you've got interest in common with us. It'd just be fun to hang out and BS. never bring up gaming. When you get to the point of trying to feel out the other side of will they gel with your game style, ask them. Say, hey, if you're interested, we've got an opening in our gaming group, but I want to be sure that, you know, you're going to fit in well. You're going to have a good time playing what we're playing and be interested in what we're doing. What kind of games do you like to play? What do you like to get out of a game? And if they say, oh, I want to do this, this, and this, which is the opposite of what you do, say, oh, that, you know, that's cool. I've done stuff like that, you know, whatever, but that's really not what the games we're doing right now are like. So this is probably, you know, not going to be a good fit just because I say not be a good fit because we're sound like a job interview again, but just say something effective, you know, that's not the type of game we're running. Yeah, that's not what we're running. We're running something completely different. I really don't know that you'd enjoy it. And so, you know, it's cool, but if we ever change what we're playing, then, you know.
Yeah. You're ordering a steak and we're more of the pork chops and stuffing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not what you'd expect.
There's a big difference between having a conversation, having a fully structured questionnaire or something.
Yes.
When I was younger, I actually put together a questionnaire.
Here we go. Hold on.
I had a lot of bad experiences with dating and trying to ask girls out. So I actually put together a questionnaire of, this is a questionnaire for anyone I am considering asking out.
Wayne's Awkward Confession.
Did you give it to anyone?
Meaning you would take on a date?
Yes, I gave it to multiple. Yes, Chris. People I would take on a date. Girls I would take on a date.
Did they finish the date?
As horrible
because
as
I know
this...
you will, because I know for damn sure you're not going to get a second one out of this. So they, my question oh, is, no, would they actually finish the date?
It was something I gave them before asking them out. And as horrible as this sounds, and it is horrible, the way I phrased it was very had a lot of humor in it.
I called this one, didn't I?
The way I phrase it, there's a lot of humor to it. It's the it hit all of the important ones I needed to ask, like
it's
you
like
know,
watching a train wreck in slow motion.
It hit all the important ones I needed to ask, like, are you a lesbian? Because that was an issue that came up once. You know, but then it had questions like, is any of your family members professional wrestlers? And if so, are there any of particular painful?
Do you
are
like
there any particular
Gladiator
painful
films?
Moves that they're signature for?
Have you ever seen a grown man naked?
Not the direction I was going.
You ever been in
with.
A Turkish prison?
No. Basically, the questioner had a question on it that said, do you have any overprotective relatives that are professional wrestlers or know any signature extremely painful moves?
Signature moves? Like the Boston Crab.
Yes.
Headlock? Fine. Boston Crab, right out.
You got to look out for what's going to hurt.
Wow.
And you know what? The way it was phrased, it actually was a conversation
Did
starter.
You,
as horrible as it sounds, and no, I didn't date anyone I actually gave it to.
So it was a ringing
big
success.
Shock.
So Sarah never got the questionnaire.
It was a total
Sarah
weed out.
The questionnaire.
It was total weed
a
out.
A copy of the questionnaire.
If so, this is so a resource document.
I don't think so, but I do have a lot of my old computer hard drives. I might actually check that out and see if I
still
have
it. Wait,
we're putting this up.
If you can get me a copy of the...
That needs to be put in the Skies of Glass rules in the character development chapter.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Wow.
If you send it into Wayne, he will personally evaluate it. If you are dating material, your character gets some kind of perk. I don't even know what that
weeks,
perk is.
52 shows, so, man. I didn't think it was possible.
Like I was saying... Questionnaire, probably a bad idea. Okay. Not going to work out like you think it's going to. Although, in my case, it was a conversation starter.
Sure.
I made friends from it. I never actually got a date from it.
Gotcha.
You know, the only thing I have to add to that, which honestly, I can't even get the words out of my mouth. The only thing I've got to add to this is... And it's somewhat related, and it's actually kind of a serious thing. Your questionnaire idea and the way in which you did it, yes, horribly, horribly wrong, but horribly, horribly amusing at the same time. However, after you've been married for a while and you go out, that's actually a good thing to do. I would actually recommend that as a tactic. I don't want to turn this into a relationship episode, but that actually, that works.
Oh,
I say that because
stop.
I've
no,
done
it's
it.
Not. This is mentally fucked. Retarded.
No,
this is not a good idea at any point in your life.
No.
Give someone a questionnaire.
Don't give them a
what
questionnaire.
Is wrong with
but you bring a sheet of questions to talk about, and it's all simple questions which you may have forgotten.
We've
over the course
of
the
relationship. Was it really around to Chris's then? Parents are related.
I mean, I think Wayne is, he was ahead of his time. Think about it. This is what eHarmony and all those dating sites do. He was just doing it before those sites existed.
That is true.
I would love to see if eHarmony asked questions about wrestling moves.
You should sue eHarmony. You had to know what you were getting into. If there's an overprotective relative that's going to hurt you, you need to know what to avoid.
Mm-hmm. You want to know how to counter that move? Is that what you're saying?
Most people are embarrassed by the fact that at some
point...
Did you
date anyone from the Hogan family?
Most people are embarrassed by the fact that at some point in junior high, they pass a note that says, will you go out with me, check one, yes, no.
Oh, this was
you
senior
had a
year
goddamn high. Number two pencil SAT.
This was senior year high school.
This was probably a junior high. It was probably even on Scantron, man.
No, this was senior high school. This wasn't junior high. And it was
yeah,
part
that
of,
makes it that much better.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But, you know, yeah, now it's okay. Now it's totally okay.
Oh, but until you're married, then it's perfectly ideal, right, Chris?
Well, no, you have to be married for a while. I'm not saying do this like on your first anniversary or something.
Yeah, the funny thing was when I made it,
wasn't
I never
the first
actually
anniversary
intended
paper
to give
anyway.
It to anyone.
Yes, it is.
Honey, we've been married for a year. I figure now is the time to get to know you.
Yeah, here's your paper gift. Fill out this survey.
When I made the form, I never actually expected to give it to anyone. I made it because I was really frustrated. I'd had all these strings of bad experiences, and I made it for sheer comedic value to show my friends to laugh about. And
then I made questionnaires in junior high when you're feeling love troubles. You're supposed to do
this
really
was high
bad
school,
poetry.
Not junior high.
You know what? We
it
have
doesn't
a,
matter.
We have a guy.
You're still supposed to do poetry.
Wayne and I have a friend who did this sort of in reverse. He was tired of trying to go to like bars and pick up people and get shot down and or have friends like, well, I don't really know you, and you know, that sort of thing. So he got, I think it was on Craigslist, which is just the most wonderful place to find women anywhere, and he did a questionnaire for himself. I haven't read it, but it was something like 200 questions, right?
I forgot about that.
He wrote each question, and it was everything you could possibly ever know about a person. And it was dead honest. He said, I filled it out to be dead honest. It was everything from what's your favorite movie? What do you like? What are your politics? What are your religions? What's your favorite sexual position? How many people have you had sex with? What's your blood type? I mean, it's just
he wasn't asking them any of this.
No, it was
he
stuff.
Filled it
he
out for himself.
It. And he
questions.
Put it in his personal ad. And it was just this. And he said he actually got a lot of dates on it and a lot of women. We're like, wow, you are like really, really honest. And now I want to go out with you and meet you because nobody does this. But it was mainly a lot of hookups. So more power to him.
So, yep. Thank you guys for tuning in.
Best episode ever.
You know, we did have other places we were going to go with this whole thing on trying to find a new player, and I've lost it all. I think I've just lost about 30 IQ points.
You know, that's
past.
What
maybe
I love
we need
about
maybe
these,
we need to call it now Wayne's awkward derailments. Fashion.
Yeah,
that's what I love about these awkward things. And as you're having the conversation about the interviews and things like that, I remembered the story. I haven't remembered this in 10 years. So many of these stories that come out, I've forgotten about that part of my life until we sit at the mics, and then I get to see the look on Dan's face. Yeah. I get
this
to see his jaw drop.
Yeah,
I get to see him
I
sit
think,
there.
I think you actually stopped him.
Oh, yeah, actually, I stopped, and I did too. You don't have to worry. The people are going to love this, Dan. This is going to be one of the best episodes ever.
It was comedy gold. It was only when Chris tried to say that, oh, after you've been married...
That I was, think you're misunderstanding what I'm trying to say.
Sure. What are you trying to say, Chris?
No,
what are you trying to say? I need to know. What are you trying to say, Chris?
It's in the Bible somewhere. So, So anyway, we do have more to say on the subject of integrating new players, which maybe we'll get back to next time, provided the stroke clears up by then. So, thank you guys for tuning in. Fear the Con 4, if you still want to go, is out there. And don't forget to get those submissions in for Chris for episode 200, RPG Toolkit, all stuff's in the show notes. And we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2010. Listeners are free to use the show in a non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network app, pulpgamer.com.